From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Washington Watch. Coming up, just wrapping up our pastor's conference in Cincinnati, Ohio yesterday, and headed back to the studio. But wanted to check in with one of our members of Congress who's back in the district this month. All the members of Congress back from the House, anyway, back, many of them holding town hall meetings. And, you know, what's on the minds of constituents? We're going to talk about that in just a moment with our good friend Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana. Also, this past weekend was the one-year anniversary of Charlottesville. And you might have read this in the news. The Unite the Right was trying to gather the racial dividers again, but they failed. And why is this important, and why should you care? We're going to talk about that with Congressman Mike Johnson. Also, the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh will begin on September 4th. That was announced last week. In advance of those hearings, a growing number of people are urging red state Democrats to vote to confirm Supreme Court nominee Judge Kavanaugh. Carrie Severino with the Judicial Crisis Network will be here with us in just a bit. And North Miami Beach, Florida, all right, they have caved to the Anti-Christian Freedom From Religion Foundation. Now, the foundation, which, you know, every now and then crawls out from underneath their rock, sent a letter to the government, to the mayor there in North Miami Beach, saying that their sponsorship of the National Day of Prayer was a violation of the separation of church and state. Anyway, Dr. Ronnie Floyd, president of the National Day of Prayer, will be here later in the program to tell us all about it. And in this, in the I Can't Believe It's True segment, a judge in New Mexico has released four or five radical Islamists who police say were running a New Mexico compound training children to carry out school shootings. The judge released them on what's called a signature bond, meaning they didn't even have to put up any money to get out of jail, trusting that they will show up because they're not a danger, according to the judge. We'll talk with Ryan Morrow, director of Clarion Intelligence Network. And by the way, speaking of terrorists, today is the sixth anniversary of the shooting that took place at the Family Research Council, our D.C. office. On August 15th, 2012, Floyd Lee Corkins entered the Family Research Council's building in downtown D.C. Leo Johnson, our building manager, was at the front desk that morning, and after asking Corkins to produce identifications, Corkins began rummaging through his backpack, which contained, we found out later, 15 Chick-fil-A sandwiches, which he intended to shove into the mouths of his victims. Corkins was also carrying a 9mm handgun and 100 rounds of ammunition. Now, Corkins, after shooting Leo Johnson, who we are very thankful has fully recovered, Corkins admitted to the FBI that he was motivated by the Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC, and he was convicted of domestic terrorism and sentenced to prison. Footnote to that story, the Southern Poverty Law Center continues to recklessly label Christian organizations and conservative individuals, like my colleague Steve Scalise, who was shot last year, all in an effort to silence them. The Southern Poverty Law Center, linked to domestic terrorism in federal court. All right, this past weekend, the racial dividers, and folks, it's unfortunate, but racial division is still in this country, and quite frankly, we need to address it when it pops up, especially from the church. In fact, it's probably been, I don't know, it's been 12 years ago, Bishop Harry Jackson and I wrote a book called Personal Faith, Public Policy, and one of the seven issues that we dealt with was the racial divide in this country and the fact that the church needs to be active in addressing it. Because if there's anything I believe that can bring us together, and you see it. Now, I know a lot of people say that the Sunday mornings are racially segregated by the ethnic groups. And quite frankly, I go to a lot of churches that that's not the case. When you look at something that can bring people across economic lines and ethnic lines, just like our pastor's briefing we had in Cincinnati yesterday, all of our briefings like that, we have a mix of various ethnic backgrounds. See, I believe it's the church, the cross of Jesus Christ, that brings these folks, that can bring us together across these lines that society says should divide us. Well, joining me now is my good friend, Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana's 4th Congressional District. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, it's always a pleasure.
Hey, let's talk about you. You've been out there on the back in the district during the month of August, holding town hall meetings, talking with folks. And that's always instructive, and I think it's healthy because you hear from people. But you and I were talking about this, that this issue of the racial divide in this country has actually been a topic of conversation.
You know, it has. And you mentioned this was the tragic one-year anniversary of the Charlottesville fiasco, I call it, the debacle that took place a year ago Saturday. And President Donald J. Trump, you know, tweeted on Saturday. He said, quote, "The riots in Charlottesville a year ago resulted in senseless death and division, and we must come together as a nation." He said, "I condemn all types of racism and acts of violence. Peace to all Americans." Of course, the radical left pounced on it and said it wasn't enough, but it did spark, again, an important conversation. And the so-called Unite the Right rally they tried to pull off on Saturday was really a failure by all accounts. I think they only drew maybe at maximum about 200 people. But the counter protesters are there by the thousands. But, you know, when I'm in the town halls, Tony, I'm out with constituents, and I serve 15 parishes or counties in Louisiana, 760,000 constituents, people from all walks of life, all races. And when we have a town hall, it gathers everyone. And it's a great kind of family conversation. And you know what I do? I go right to the heart of the issue. And this is what I've been saying, Tony, to the people last few days here. Just directly addressing this issue. Say, look, we all know that racism is wrong, but why is it wrong? And my challenge to our folks is that they should not take for granted any longer that the younger people, the high school students, college kids, the next generation coming behind us, that they understand really why that is wrong. And so we spend a little time unpacking that and talking about why it violates the most fundamental principles of our great nation. I think it's been a pretty healthy debate.
You look at what the Constitution Declaration says. Clearly, from a civic standpoint, it lays out why this ethnic divide that is in our country is wrong. But from a Christian perspective, we go back to the fact that every human being is created in the image of God. Therefore, they have that value that we should place on one another is intrinsic because we're created in the image of God. Now, that does not mean that everything that people chooses to do makes them equal, but they are equal from a standpoint of, as a human being, regardless of their race, regardless of their orientation, whatever. They're all to be respected because of the fact that they are created in the image of God.
I think that's very well said, and that's what I've been talking about in these large groups, diverse groups in my district, about this, that what you just said, Tony, is the central idea of America. It is the central premise is that we boldly declare the self-evident truth that all men are created equal, and they're endowed by their creator, our God, with the same inalienable rights. And the whole point of that is precisely what you said. It's a biblical truth that the founders recognize that all of us are made in the image of God, and so every single person has inestimable dignity and value. And our value is not related in any way to the color of our skin or what neighborhood we live in or what we made on the ACT. I mean, those are irrelevant things. Our value is inherent because it's given to us by God. And so what follows then logically, and this is what I've been talking with the crowds about, is that any fool who contends that he has some sort of natural right of supremacy over his neighbors violates the very foundational creed of his country. And as we know as Christians and those who believe in the Bible, that fool would also be violating the greatest commandments of the God who created him. Because obviously when they stopped Jesus and asked him, what are the greatest commandments? He said, well, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. So if you hate your neighbor or you think you're supreme over your neighbor by some natural right, you clearly don't understand the basic rules of the Creator who gave you all of your rights. And so that's an important thing to, I think, walk young people through logically to show them the fallacy of that whole argument.
See, the key element of bringing people together, as I said earlier, is an understanding of our orientation in terms of our beginnings. Where did we come from? Who created us? Who establishes the rules? And as you just pointed out, where Jesus said we're to love our neighbor as ourself, when we push that from the public square, when we remove that element, that basic understanding that there is a creator and that he created us all equal, Now, again, we can make different choices and the outcomes will be different, but we're all created equal. When we remove that from the understanding of our children, how can we hope to have unity in our society?
That's precisely the point. When you erase these basic truths, then something has to fill the void. And so any crazy argument or idea then competes there. Now, we believe in the free marketplace of ideas, and unlike the Southern Poverty Law Center and some of these other characters on the radical left, the fringe left, we're not in the business of trying to censor and silence viewpoints that we disagree with. We want all those ideas to be brought out of the public square so they can be fairly debated and evaluated. But we also have truth like Elijah. We have confidence in the truth that at the end of the day, the truth of the capital T will bear out. And so so long as we're allowed to do that, I think we have an obligation to share that truth.
Yeah, and that's the key difference between the political left and the political right in this country, that the right, we don't mind having the debate. Put all of the put your best argument out there, and we'll take it. We'll debate it. We'll discuss it. We'll debate it in a civil way, but we will with civility. But we're not afraid of the arguments of the left, where you look at the left and they simply want to shut down the discussion because ultimately they cannot defend their ideology.
Well, that's exactly right. And if you listen to people like the SPLC and their advocates, you know, they regard the biblical truth that you and I have been talking about for the last few minutes as offensive. And so if you ask them, they would really love to push that out of the public square so that all these young people, college students and high school students, never get a chance to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we have to defend against every day. And you and I do that and so many others, to ensure that we have the right to remind Americans of our very foundational, fundamental principles, the ones that the nation was founded upon. And if we lose that, we lose it at our great peril, because those are the things at the end of the day that draw us back together. You know, Lincoln, when he was given his first inaugural, you know, following all the tragedy and going after the Civil War and all everything that happened, he said, we have to appeal to the better angels of our nature. And that's what all this is about, drawing people to those central truths so that they can work together, they can be civil again. We can address these problems, this increasing division and the coarsening of our culture, because it's fueled so often by vitriol in our politics and our public discourse based upon a tragic misunderstanding of these foundational truths. So that's why all this ties together. That's why it's so important. That's why an anniversary like this tragedy in Charlottesville is worthy of our time to unpack some of this to people we're talking with. And I encourage everybody listening, your audience is savvy. They get this. The admonition is, don't take for granted. Talk about it more.
Right. Absolutely. All of these things. Have these discussions around the dinner table with your children. Have them with your family. Don't, you know, we're afraid oftentimes to talk about these issues. And that's a part of what Washington Watch wants to do is equip you to be able to talk with confidence. Mike Johnson, as always, great to have you on the program, and enjoy your time back in the district.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you.
All right, Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, coming up next, red state Democrats are feeling the heat. I know it's August, but they're feeling the heat on something else, about confirming President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court. When we return, we'll talk with Carrie Severino of the Judicial Crisis Network. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't you go anywhere.
Out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen. Sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, the president has his second nomination to the United States Supreme Court. You know, this was a key issue in the election. In fact, the president released a list of the candidates that he would consider. So the entire nation had an opportunity to essentially vet these two lists of individuals that the president would consider for the court. Unprecedented. And so this was a very key aspect of the election. In fact, many conservatives, many of you listening, this was a top reason that you decided to vote for Donald Trump. Well, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, the president's nominee for this vacancy on the Supreme Court, his second pick for the high court, is meeting with various senators ahead of his upcoming Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, which was announced last week, will begin September the 4th. Now, Judge Kavanaugh is set to meet with Democratic Senators Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, Joe Donnelly of Indiana, those two today, and Senator Claire McCaskill next week. She's in Missouri. A lot of our listeners there in the state of Missouri. Kavanaugh has already met with Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Well, with us now is Carrie Severino. She is the chief counsel and policy director at the Judicial Crisis Network, a conservative legal organization that is all over the court issue and in particular on this nomination to the Supreme Court. Carrie, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's great to be here.
As I was saying, this was a key aspect of the president's successful run for the president. And it wasn't like he hid anything. He put all these names out there. And now you have some of these Democrats in red states, states that went with Donald Trump, again, in large part because of the courts. What's going to happen as Kavanaugh sits down with these Senate Democrats and discusses with them, you know, the prospects of him standing before them, or at least his nomination being before them?
Well, the one Democrat who had agreed to sit down with him previously, that's Senator Manchin in West Virginia, of course, a state that went significantly by like 40 points for Trump. So no surprise, it makes sense for him to do this and not look like he's towing Schumer's line. He had a very productive meeting, he said. They talked for 2 hours. So he had a lot of opportunity to ask any of the questions he had about Judge Kavanaugh's record. I mean, he's been on the list for months, so people had an opportunity to vet him previously. but it's great for those senators to have a chance to talk to him. And Judge Kavanaugh is just so intelligent, so articulate, and so thoughtful that I think it's going to be impossible for anyone who is willing to meet with him, is actually open-minded to that point, to think this guy is the you know, the kind of crazy apocalyptic level nominee that people like Chuck Schumer are painting him. He is someone who has had such a long record on the judge and is a very even-handed judge and committed to the rule of law. That's all that, you know, and anyone on either side of the aisle can ask. So I'm looking forward to more of those meetings today with Senators Donnelly and Heitkamp. And I think it's something their constituents clearly want them to do, to vote for Judge Kavanaugh. So I hope they're willing to show their independence from this party line actions that are being demanded by Schumer and be willing to vote for such a great nominee.
Well, Carrie Severino, explain for our listeners, you know, the Supreme Court, the Senate has a role in the confirmation. It's advise and consent. And what they're looking at, and we saw this with the judicial nominees of President Obama, is their judicial qualifications, not necessarily their judicial philosophy in terms of whether or not they have a conservative view of the Constitution or a liberal view. I mean, that is an element of the elections. When you have a liberal president, they tend to look for candidates who see the Constitution as a living, breathing document that they can find all kinds of stuff in the shadows of. You have a conservative, they're looking for those who look at the text, the black and white, what is on the document. I mean, that's just kind of a given.
Elections mean that we also have senators who have a responsibility to the Constitution. So I do think they have to vet for a judge to make sure that he or she is going to be faithful to that constitutional oath that they take. And that means not just making it up as they go along, someone who has the judicial temperament to look at the law and not what he or she just wishes the law were. So I think that's part of the Senate's consideration. But the Constitution doesn't specify the details of how they have to do it, simply that they have to advise and consent. The president has the initiative there because he gets to pick the person, and then they get the up or down vote. So senators are going to view their role differently, but ultimately the check on that is their constituents, the citizens who say, hey, if you're just doing this because I would have voted for him if President Obama picked him, but not if President Trump picked him, I don't think that's something that most people in America want. Maybe that plays well in New York. Maybe that plays well in California. But I don't think that's the kind of thing that people want to see in West Virginia or in Indiana or North Dakota. They want to see someone who's taking this president with his really outstanding judicial nomination seriously, because this is one area, you know, to agree or disagree with some of his other policy agenda items, this isn't something that I think hands down is the president's most successful initiative. He has just made such excellent picks for the judiciary, people who are smart, who are principled, and that's the kind of thing that I think most Americans are going to want to say, put the politics aside, like Trump or don't like him, but this judge and Judge Kavanaugh in particular will be so great on the Supreme Court. You've got to vote to confirm it.
Well, without question, this is one of those areas that's going to be part of President Trump's legacy, as he has quietly been replacing activists on the court who have retired, filling those vacancies with, constitutionalists, textualists, those who read the Constitution for what it says. And the Constitution does not give the Senate the ability to do an outcome-based view of these nominees, thinking, looking at what are particular issues and what might be the outcome. It's more of their, are they qualified? Are they good candidates who will faithfully uphold the Constitution?
Yeah, it's not, the judges aren't there to be someone to give you your laundry list of policy goals. Sometimes it sounds like that when you listen to, what Hillary Clinton ran on, frankly, is what kind of judges she would put on, or some of these senators seem to think this is someone who's supposed to be there to give me my policy goals. That's not it at all. They want to use the courts as an end run around our actual constitutional system, but really the judges should be there just upholding the laws passed by Congress.
All right, Carrie Severino, got to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Have a great day.
All right. To find out more about the Judicial Crisis Network, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right. The Freedom From Religion Foundation. Yes, they're at it again. This time, their target, the National Day of Prayer in North Miami Beach. We'll talk with Dr. Ronnie Floyd, the president of the National Day of Prayer, when we return. Don't go away.
feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. They're at it again. The Freedom From Religion Foundation, the anti-Christian atheist organization, targeting cities. This time, a city-sponsored National Day of Prayer event in North Miami Beach, Florida, saying that it violates the separation of church and state, and they sent one of those threatening, misguided letters saying that, the city was vulnerable legally. Of course, we know that that's not the case, but it appears the city has folded. Joining us now is Dr. Ronnie Floyd. He is the senior pastor of Cross Church in Springdale, Arkansas. He is also the president of the National Day of Prayer and the former president of the Southern Baptist Convention. Dr. Floyd, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Great to be with you again.
All right, so what do we know? The Freedom From Religion Foundation, once again, popping up, this time in Miami, North Miami Beach, Florida. What do we know about this?
Well, Tony, we just really were informed about this a couple of days ago through an article that was given to us, and we're now checking on all the internalities of that at the National Day of Prayer. Doing our own research also, but there's not a lot out there about it. I think the biggest thing is that they declared that we were unnecessarily divisive, and that is totally incorrect, obviously. And some of their matters in relationship that the city of North Miami Beach is also preferring religion over non-religion, Christianity over all other faiths, which, you know, is really bizarre. And the bottom line is, ultimately, one of the biggest problems to me with what they have done is that they have totally forgotten that the National Day of Prayer is the law of the land. Therefore, it is not simply for those who are of the Christian faith, even though we at the National Day of Prayer Task Force are the Christian expression of the National Day of Prayer, but you know very well through events in various places across the country, including Washington, D.C., that there are all kinds of religions that are called upon on the National Day of Prayer. In fact, that's what the law of the land says, that we should call upon all Americans from all faiths and religions to spend a day of prayer for our nation. And that has been the law ever since 1988, when it was amended in the 1952 law to make the first Thursday of every May deemed as the National Day of Prayer.
Well, and that's what we saw this past May at the White House in the Rose Garden, where President
Absolutely.
Donald Trump hosted a National Day of Prayer event, and all of the major faiths of the country were represented there at that National Day of Prayer.
Absolutely, and it's been that way every time I've been to any kind of event like that at the White House in relationship to that. And what people have to understand is that there are different tentacles of the National Day of Prayer on the basis of various groups that lead the National Day of Prayer. And obviously what we're responsible for at the National Day of Prayer Task Force is we are responsible for the Christian expression of the National Day of Prayer. And that's what we do. And that's what we promote. We promote it unashamedly. But you and I both know that this country was built upon the principles of God's word. We're not running away from our heritage. We're running to our heritage. And we're not praying that America becomes something new, even though we are more than would be welcome to the new expression of what America should be. But we're wanted to return to the basics of the old, of what we have formally founded ourselves upon as a nation. And when we do that, we're going to begin to look a little bit different in our nation, even as we move forward with progress in our country.
Dr. Floyd, two issues I want to hit very quickly before we run out of time. One is, as you made reference to in the letter that the Freedom From Religion Foundation sent, is that they said religion in government is innately divisive. Actually, presidents, all the way down, governors, legislatures, city councils, mayors, have used prayer to unite communities throughout the history of this country.
Yes, Tony, that statement is absolutely so out of place and so non-historic in its founding and in its whatever its meaning might be. I'm beyond words even how to describe that statement. But you and I both know that we saw great unity prevailed this last year across America on the National Day of Prayer, and it's one day a year that people rise up above the fray. You know the ridiculous nature of this, Tony, because the last part of this article, which was published by the Freedom From Religious Foundation, says it is a national nonprofit organization with over 32,000 members across the country. Now think about that, including 1,500 members in Florida and a chapter in Central Florida. To think that 32,000 members of some small organization would absolutely try to change the course of American history and Americans' commitment to prayer, which is, again, on the National Day of Prayer, the law, that is absolutely
right.
Astounding to me.
Yeah, and we're out of time, but that second question I wanted to hit is the fact that jurisdictions, whether they be state or local government, are clearly within the limits of government to host prayer for our nation, for our states, and our communities. Dr. Ronnie Floyd, got to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Always good to be with you, Tony. Blessings.
All right, folks. Thanks so much, Dr. Floyd, leading out on prayer, something our nation desperately needs. And we'll talk about why. One of the cases coming up, can't believe this is happening. Five suspected terrorists released in New Mexico by a judge on their signature. That's next. Don't go away.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Let me remind you, the Stand Firm app. It is the latest tool that we have created for activists. It is a great tool for your activist toolkit. Go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, or simply go to the App Store, Stand Firm. What it does, it will provide notifications for legislative alerts coming tailored to you, depending on what congressional district you live in. Gives you an easy way to respond to what's happening. Also, this is great to share with friends, especially those friends of yours that are not fortunate enough to live in an area where they can hear Washington Watch every afternoon. We're in over 40 states, almost 300 stations, but yet there are some folks that are not yet getting Washington Watch over the airwaves. They can get it through the Stand Firm app. So go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, and get the Stand Firm app. And you know what you do when you get it? Stand firm. All right, this is one of those things that you just can't believe is true. Five suspected radical Islamist terrorists are being released into the public after being initially arrested by police for running a compound in New Mexico, training children, according to police, to engage in basically school shootings. Now, a judge in New Mexico, I'm not making this up, all right, released Sarah Backus, released the five defendants on a $20,000 signature bond. What does that mean? It means they just basically sign on the line, and if they don't show up, then they have to pay $20,000. But they didn't have to put a dime down to get out of jail. Now, this is, again, hard to believe. So joining us now with the details, Ryan Morrow. He is the director of the Clarion Intelligence Network. Ryan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's great to be with you.
All right, Ryan, what did I miss in laying this out?
Not much, but basically the way it works is that you're supposed to put money down, and then that you get the money back if you show up for your trial. It's a way of making sure that you do that. And Judge Backus said that the prosecutors failed to show clear and convincing evidence that they posed a threat to the community, and specifically why? Because they did not lay out a plan on the part of the defendants, meaning the prosecutors did not say, okay, well, they're planning on carrying out this attack at this location against this target. It's all aspirational, and they said they failed, and the judge said they failed to show the evidence that they would not show up.
Why do you train kids to do school shootings unless you intend for? I mean, why else would you train them to do that? And before we get into, lay out the facts of this case: what they were arrested for, and what was transpiring in New Mexico.
Well, the compound was raided because they were mistreating the kids. They were starving, almost to death. They needed food and water, but they also knew that this group of people were stockpiling weapons and were Islamic extremists, but member of a cult within radical Islam, so it's even worse. And so they raided it, and one of the kids who was actually abducted passed away because they weren't giving him his medical treatment. They believe that that was offensive to Allah, and so they said he has to go through Quranic Islamic therapy to expel the demons inside of him. And as a result, the three-year-old disabled toddler died. So it's a horrific case. And anyone with common sense would say, yeah, they shouldn't be out in the community. That's dangerous. But this judge thinks otherwise, and was saying this is all disturbing information, but there wasn't evidence of an actual, what she would consider to be a plan, a specific plot. So you're training to do something, you want to do something, but we don't know that you actually were putting that plan in motion. So you're a threat, but not a direct threat to the community. That's how she justified this insane ruling.
I'm at a loss to say you have a compound in which you're stockpiling weapons, mistreating children, some that have been abducted. You are training them to engage in school shootings and confronting other authority, like the police and others. What legal reason would you actually undertake those activities? What justifiable reason would you do that?
Well, it's not, she would say, and obviously I'm playing devil's advocate here, she would say, well, it's not a judgment on whether what they did is legal or illegal. They're probably going to be convicted. The question is, will they show up to court for the trial, and do they pose enough of a direct threat to the community to justify holding them until trial? And she felt that the prosecutors failed to make that case for reasons that I still do not understand. I don't understand where this absurd standard of evidence she has comes from. She also accused the prosecutors of unfairly trying to involve the religion in the case, basically agreeing with the defense that said if these were white Christians, they may not be there and arrested. Of course they would be.
Let's go to Waco, Texas, and see what happened there.
Right. Right.
I mean, not so that they were Christian, yeah. But they were. It was
both a different charge, is what she would say. Yeah. But you're right. Fundamentally, you're right. So that was her reasoning, and it's reasoning that I haven't heard before. It's vague and not justifiable, and that she appeared to not really believe that they were serious about carrying out these attacks, or that the evidence was strong enough to make the assertion they were intending to carry out attacks. She seemed to, the language of the document she filed to justify her decision, seemed to kind of have a dismissive tone about all of that.
Well, and look, in our judicial system, you are innocent until proven guilty, unless I'm not going to go down that path. You are innocent until proven guilty, a fundamental element of our judicial system. However, there are those who are at greater risk of, especially if they're engaged in or been, in this case, trained for violence, that they could perpetrate an act of violence upon the citizens while they're released. In this case, they're released, I get that. But not even required to put down money to ensure that they show back up in court. I mean, what's going to keep them from skipping the country?
Well, and again, this is her argument as someone who clearly doesn't understand the difficulties of law enforcement and counterterrorism. Her argument is that in order to deny someone at least being out on house arrest, and in order to justify just holding them, you have to show that other measures would be inadequate to take care of the safety concerns and the concerns about them showing up for trial. So the conditions are that they, with the exception of the one adult who is still being held because he has an additional charge, of those four adults, well, they're going to be on house arrest. They'll have an ankle bracelet, so they're monitored. They're not allowed to leave the state, leave the country. And so in her mind, that's all enforceable, and the threat is minimized or evaporated. When I talked to law enforcement in New Mexico about this, because they contacted me just kind of venting after this happened, they said, look, there have been people with those exact same charges in our state who have taken off the ankle bracelet and escaped, and we haven't been able to find them for years. So this idea that that somehow makes it so likely that they're going to show up for trial and that they're not going to escape is insane and invalidated by what recent history shows.
Well, Ryan, we know that people can't get across the border, so they can't there's no way they could escape across the border right there in New Mexico. I mean, okay, let's talk about the judge for a moment. This is a judge. How did she get into her post as a judge?
She was appointed by Governor Martinez, who's a Republican, but she's now regretting that decision. Oh, the other additional information that you should know, and this broke last night, is that one of the women who has been released, she's like the leader of this, she has been detained now on immigration charges. So apparently they were readying that charge in case this happened. And so hopefully she'll go before a different judge, since I'm not quite sure how that all works. But she's from Haiti, and so the assumption is that she overstayed her visa. So now you've got that added into the equation here. So this really does give you an example of, even though they didn't sneak across the border, overstaying your visa is an issue of border control and immigration security.
Right. Ryan Morrow, my guest. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Now, one of these individuals linked to an unindicted co-conspirator in the 1993 World Trade Center attack. So, I mean, it's not like these folks do not have some connections with terrorism.
Right. And so according to a report that I published at Clarion Project's website, there are reports that one of the women at the compound before joining this cult was supportive of Al-Qaeda chief Anwar al-Awlaki, who was killed in a drone strike. But on a more broader and deeper level, this entire family is in some way relatives of this radical imam who's kind of like the grandfather of the Muslim American community in the United States, Imam Siraj Wahaj in Brooklyn, whose extremism goes back decades. We've all known about it. He just hasn't crossed the line into doing something so illegal that you can arrest him for it. So he's slick. And this is a fruition of a broader network, not just of groups that want to establish compounds and likely influence them, but the broader radical Islamic network that includes smart jihadists who don't do reckless, over-the-top things like those at this compound did, because they don't want to be arrested. There's better ways to do this.
So, Ryan, is politics playing a role in this, or political correctness?
I would say political culture. This whole social justice warrior, over-the-top mindset. That's the only way I can understand the judge's ruling, is that she must come from a background that sees the criminal justice system as so oppressive, especially towards the minorities, that she bends over backwards in order to defend those that she sees as most likely to be victimized, and therefore demands a level of evidence that in her mind she thinks is somehow achievable, but in reality it isn't, because it's very, very rare that in a case involving violence and terrorism like this that you get this level of evidence. Very rare. But for her, it's still not good enough.
Given that this involves potential immigration violations, it could potentially be issues of terrorism, does the federal government have a right to step in here?
They were looking at it. Well, the federal government stepped in at least on the immigration charge for the one woman. And then the one guy's being held. We'll see what happens with him. He set up a security company with his sister, who's also from the compound, in order to get training in these type of things and to acquire weapons. I provided the government with that information. And I also provide them with information of identity fraud and likely money laundering. So hopefully something results from that so that this isn't just a done deal. But, yeah, it's possible the federal government gets involved in a broader level. They're certainly looking into doing that, but I would assume at this point that they just haven't acquired the evidence. You can know someone did something, but you have to be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
So, and that's tough.
Mm-hmm. So this group, this compound, radical Muslim teaching, Islamic teaching, are they associated or identified with any particular Islamic group?
The specific compound, not so much, aside from the family relationship to Imam Siraj Wahaj, who I don't think was involved in this compound operation. But he is, like I said, he's a big leader of the radical Islamic movement in the United States. That's more of the Muslim Brotherhood type, so not necessarily ISIS or Al-Qaeda, although there have been some associations with Al-Qaeda figures. That's fishy. But he's more part of the African-American prison convert, real radical anti-police movement in the United States. So there's a family connection there. The bigger, more important connection, which is harder to prove in something like court, is the ideological connection. Where did the fundamental ideas and expertise come from for this type of thing? So you may end up in a cult that diverges from what most radical Muslims believe, but how do you even get on that path? Where those ideas come from? And I think it's fair to assume that came from this imam and his network that's based out of Brooklyn, but he really does have a national audience of people who have these types of ideas, building compounds, setting up security companies, apocalyptic end times prophecies from the Islamic perspective, all those different ingredients that lead to even crazier behavior.
So, Ryan Morrow, one final question for you. Where were they getting their funding? How were they able to maintain this compound?
It looks like that just came from their regular their own regular jobs and whatever front companies that they had. So the one guy had a company involved in finance, one involved in publishing, one involved in security. But we don't know anything about drug sales or anything like that. Very likely we'll come up with something, but at this point, nothing about big donations or anything like that.
All right, Ryan Morrow, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, to find out more about this story, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over and see the articles that Ryan has written. Let me just say, folks, this is not isolated. I've spoken to a number of officials in the intelligence community and law enforcement, and there are compounds like this, not necessarily training kids to do school shootings, but compounds with similar ideology that are all around the country. Yeah, troubling. That's why we need law enforcement, but we need judges. Judges, yes, that back them up. All right, folks. That's the end of today's program. Thanks so much for joining us. Again, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Download the app, Stand Firm. And guess what? Until next time, I encourage you to do just that, as the Apostle Paul says in Ephesians 6, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.